you for tuning in to the Parent Survival Kit podcast, from surviving to thriving in your household. My name is Gene Schwellen. With me, as always, is my beautiful bride, Dr. Sonia Schwellen, expert pediatric psychologist, licensed psychologist, and nationally certified school psychologist. Today is part two of our emotional self-regulation series. And last week we talked about adults, parents, self-regulating our emotions, the effect it has on our kids, and really just the trickle-down effect, period. And today we're going to focus on self-regulation of emotions for our kids. What does that look like? How do we help our kids regulate their emotions? What are some tips and tricks and all that? So if you did not check out the first episode for parents and self-regulation, you really need to do that. There were some homework assignments as far as setting an alarm clock, Googling different types of emotional types, recognizing what emotional types that we have and that we experience regularly. So you definitely have to check out part one for part two to really be as beneficial as it possibly can be.
Yeah. So that's a good place to start. Let's just kind of recap. So last week we kind of talked about, being a victim to our child's behavior, even being held hostage in certain situations, right?
Absolutely.
All right. So let's talk about kids. So last week we talked about emotional scaling. Okay. And we talked about, on that scale, you just imagine a scale of 1 to 10, where 10 is where, your lid is flipped. So this is kind of what I was doing in the last episode. And it's to the point of no return, essentially. So a 10 is, a full-out panic attack. Your heart is racing. You might be crying or screaming in that moment. You might be imagining the worst, feeling out of control. And really, you're upset, but you're also upsetting everyone else around you. So that's what a 10 is.
Yeah, and you talk about, the lid flipping and whatnot. We made a joke last episode about, you flipped your lid, and now we got to close that lid based on your hand gestures when I thought you were going to hit me, but you were just showing me what the brain looks like and whatnot. So I think it's really important maybe just to kind of recap just really quick the part of the brain and how that functions and why our kids need so much more help.
All right, let me do that. So the human brain is the last thing to develop when it comes to human development. And our brain actually takes the longest out of any creature to fully develop. So it's a full 25 or more years to develop. We usually, and I didn't say this last time, but I'm going to go ahead and say it this time. We usually see full brain development happen a little bit earlier in females than we do in males. And that's kind of why we, as women feel like we're just so much more mature and our guys are never going to catch up. And
last time
on
the last episode, we talked about poo poo. And this time I think we need to talk about vomiting, because I just vomited in my mouth. Anyway.
And of course you're the one who brought up poo poo because you are the man. So anyways, thank you so much for just driving my point home so beautifully. All right, so
talking about the human brain, it reminds me of that little kid in Jerry Maguire where he goes, the human brain weighs, I don't know, however many pounds or whatnot. Yeah. He's the cutest little kid there is, but next to ours. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Okay, so 25 years or more for the human brain to develop. And so,
yeah, it's 30 years old or longer.
Exactly, thank you.
Okay.
So because of that, when we are parenting our children, we're essentially parenting a little human without a fully developed brain. And we absolutely can feel the effects of that. So it can feel like we are acting as that part of the brain for our child. So the last part of the brain to develop is the prefrontal cortex. It's that part right here behind our foreheads. It's the part that is in charge of the executive functioning of our brain. What that means is it's the control center, okay? It's the part of our brain that allows us to understand consequences of the decisions that we make in the long term. It's the part of our brain that helps us become organized and plan for the future. And it's also a really big part of self-regulation. And so the example last week is I just did something that, psychologists have been doing for ages when they use their fist as an example of the human brain. So this is just a really easy thing that we do when we're trying to explain what that looks like to a client, where this part right here is the brainstem or the back of the head. And then this part right here is the prefrontal cortex. And so this is like the more advanced part of our brain, the top part of the brain, okay? Then in the mid part of the brain or right in there is where the emotional center is. And if we're not, you know, in control.
So if you hold your hand up, you know, and you've got five fingers, you close your thumb, and then you put your fingers above your around your thumb, and now you're protecting the
emotional part of our brain.
Yeah, there you go.
Exactly. And so whenever we're escalated or when a child is not doing so well emotionally, it's as if their lid is flipped. And because their brain isn't fully developed, they need help with emotional regulation and self-control. And essentially, we're the ones who have to show them how to ultimately utilize all parts of their brain in those moments, because they just really aren't able to. And so the way that we respond to highly emotional or stressful events is one way that we can teach our kids how to handle stressful situations. And then also the way that we talk to our kids about their emotions in the moment while they're experiencing them is another really great way to help our children develop in this area.
Absolutely. That's why we talked about checking out the previous episode first, because if we can't, you know, demonstrate exactly what that looks like, our kids are going to pick up on what we do. And this is very, very important. And we talked about last episode that this is really one of the most important things we can teach our kids for just lifelong, just success and whatnot. Because if you think about it also, parents, we want our job to be as easy as possible, right? If we don't do this in the very beginning, or if we haven't done this in the very beginning, we got to start now. But if we haven't done this from the very beginning, our job's going to get tougher and tougher and tougher as our kids get older and older and older, and it doesn't get any easier. So if we do this now and take the time now, it can make a big difference.
Well, and for the parents out there that are listening that have kids that are older, I'm going to also say, like, it's never too late to start.
The brain's not fully developed yet.
Exactly. So glad you made that connection. I think you're using all parts of your brain right now. So honestly, the brain is not fully developed yet, even in your teenager. And so it is absolutely the right time to start right now.
And maybe not even your husband, so give him some grace. Okay.
All right, so we talked about emotional scaling last week. We talked about that scale of 1 to 10. Kind of when I said 10 is where that lid is totally flipped, right? And if you're upset in that moment, pretty much everyone else around you is going to be upset. Last week, we talked about some really good examples of kind of, you know, normal everyday situations that can lead us to feeling like we're a 10. Yeah. But if we're doing what we need to do in terms of regulating ourselves, we can keep ourselves from getting to that place.
Yeah, let's face it, you know, there's all kinds of things out in the world that, you know, can cause us to, or can help be a catalyst to us losing or flipping our lid, right?
Right.
But when it comes to our spouses and our kids and our family, there's definitely buttons that can be pushed, and you know, and it's easier for us, I think, at times, because it is within our household, it is with our family, to let our emotions kind of get out of control sometimes as well. So that lid can flip a lot easier, I really believe, in a lot of ways, in the household than it would out in public. So
yeah, I mean, that's true for almost everyone. And so little situations, like the example we used last week, was you sit down to have a meal, you've painstakingly put together the whole thing, you've been waiting, you're hungry, you finally sit down to take your first bite, and right before or right as you're about to put food in your mouth, one of your kids makes a request. And it's like, oh, man, can't I ever just get a minute, right?
Yep.
Or the way they follow us to the bathroom, or the way our teenagers will shut down and not answer our questions, or maybe they're rolling their eyes at us when we're speaking to them. And all of these little things can easily set us off if we're not actively regulating our emotions. And so we talked about knowing what your 4 is and knowing what your 5 is. And so we talked about that because if you're a 5, you're pretty quickly going to become a 10. There's not really any in between. Most people, once they're at a 5,
they go to a 10.
It's just you're going to a 10. Your resources are depleted. It's going to take maybe one or two more things to happen, and you're there.
You either regulate or you flip, one or the other, right?
Exactly. I like that. Yeah. So you either regulate or you flip. So the goal is to stay below a 5 at all times. And so last week, I had kind of sent the parents home with the homework assignment. Go ahead and set an alarm every hour on your phone to go off. And so in those moments, you can first identify your feelings. And you made a really good point about feelings last week. There's just more feelings than happy, mad, or sad, right?
That's right.
And then there's anxious. What else is there? Let's just name a few.
All right. There's excited. There is a disappointment. There is
confused is one of them.
Yeah.
What else? Think about feelings like this. Think about them on a continuum or like in a range. So if you think about anger,
like a spectrum,
maybe like, yeah, like infuriated is like maybe the top of that spectrum. And then below that is maybe anger. And then below that might be frustration. And then below that might be annoyed. Yeah. Right. And then think about like happiness. We could have like completely elated or full of joy. And then below that, we might just have happy. Right. And then below that, we might have content. But they're all like a form of the same emotion, just at a different level of intensity. So sadness could be like grief and despair, like a sense of hopelessness. And then maybe right underneath that. Yeah. Fear. We can be sad. We can be just kind of low.
So if you Google basically emotional scaling and whatnot, you'll see these things. There's actual pendulums and pie charts and all kinds of things that really break it down. And it's really important to really kind of understand these. And I'm still learning as an adult. I mean, you know, I wasn't taught different types of emotions as a kid, which I really hate. I wish I was taught and whatnot. These things are very important. So on our fridge, we have a magnet that has, you know, maybe 15 to 20 different types of emotions, and it has like a little square, and then you can stick on which one are you feeling right now. You can choose two or three. So it's really important for us to learn those ourselves as parents, but it's also even more so important for us to like show our kids. So there's a lot of great books that we use with our kids that we talk about emotions and what are you feeling right now? Can you go show me on the fridge what you're feeling and whatnot? So the more your kids can understand different types of emotions, the better they can express themselves and also help regulate themselves as we continue.
Well, so, and this works with teenagers. So for example, in clinic, I will be in session with a kid, and it really doesn't matter how old they are. And I'll just pull out the emojis that we all have on our phone. Right. And, I won't pull it out on my phone. Like, you can literally print these off and use a piece of paper to show what those different emotional expressions are. And underneath the faces, there will actually be a label for what that feeling is. And so on one page, you can literally print maybe 20, 25 faces with 25 different feelings. And what I'll do in session is, it doesn't really matter how old a kid is. This works with a 4-year-old. It works with a 14-year-old. I'll say, let's just talk about the first row today. And we'll list, you know, we'll discuss each feeling face in the first row on that sheet. So we might be talking about 5 different feelings in one session. And I'll literally just say, okay, what's the first one? It is, excited. And so we just break it down. Hey, do you know what excited means? Have you ever felt excited? Do you know anyone that has been excited before? What did it look like when you were excited? What does it look like when someone else is excited? Let's act it out. What does excited look like when you are excited? And so we'll do a little bit of role play in the session. So a lot of times this helps kids just learn first how to identify feelings and then recognize in themselves that they actually do have coping skills. Because without even knowing it, they are self-regulating. If I say to someone, hey, have you ever, you know, I just had this conversation, honestly, with a 15-year-old client just the other day. I said, have you ever felt infuriated? And his answer was no. I said, well, do you know what that is? He said, yeah, I do, because I've seen my dad feel infuriated. Okay, so how did you know he was infuriated? What was he doing? What did he say? Like, let's talk about that. And when he kind of explained, you know, when dad's infuriated, he's like pulling his hair out and he's pacing back and forth and he's like mumbling under his breath. And then we were able to talk about, well, when that happens, how does that make you feel? And he said, frustrated. So he could identify frustrated for himself, but not infuriated. So he's never felt that level of anger, but he could relate in some way. And then I said, okay, when you felt frustrated, what did you do? And that question helped him realize that he actually has his own coping skills. Because in that moment when he felt frustrated, he went into his room, he laid on his bed, and he listened to some music. And for that child, I was able to say, real good. Like, you self-regulated, right? Instead of allowing your frustration to become infuriation, you went and listened to music in your room. You took a moment, you stepped away, you did something to kind of distract or calm down. And now we're talking about coping skills. And this is something that he did all on his own. It's like very normal for him to go and do this when he's feeling certain feelings. And it's really cool for kids and parents to see that really everything they need is right there inside of them.
Absolutely. And that's why we talk about us learning how to regulate our own emotions to demonstrate really what that looks like for kids. Because even with this kid, he knew exactly that his dad was infuriated. So kids know, they pick up everything. They see everything. They may not experience everything, but they recognize everything. And they can also, the trickle-down effect can actually, you know, be affected based on what mom or dad or somebody else in the house is feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. So when we're teaching our kids emotional scaling, it's really cool that they are able to hear that you are doing this yourself. So that's why we sent you out last week to go and put this into practice for yourself, because when you introduce it to your children, you want to be able to tell them how well it's working for you. Have you used emotional scaling since I taught it to you?
I have, yes.
And?
And it works.
Can you give us any examples?
Well, let's see. Well, I mean, yesterday was an example that we talked about with just the kids in general. So, I mean, there's times where, you know, the kids are, you know, they get underneath your skin, they push your buttons. And so sometimes I'll walk off and I will do some deep breathing myself. Sometimes I'll disappear and I'll go into the media room and just relax for about 15, 20 minutes or an hour, depending on how long I can get away. She's not very long, so.
Do you feel like you're hearing that little voice in your head saying, like, okay, you're out of five, maybe now is time to step away? Like, do you feel like that's happening at all?
Yeah, I can definitely recognize, you know, when I'm getting escalated, when I'm out of five or I'm out of four even. And the cool thing is, too, is that, you know, I've learned more emotional types, as we talked about. But it's also really cool to see our kids, like our 8-year-old, for example, like she can communicate, like, you know, I didn't like that, it makes me sad, or, you know, I didn't like that, it really hurt my feelings, it made me upset. You know, and she's actually using emotional types in conversing with, you know, us based on something that happened, whether we did it to her or she thought we did something to her, or, you know, whether it was one of the brothers or sisters doing it. It's really cool because now the kids are saying things and they can articulate what they're feeling. And so instead of us being reactive to that or being triggered by that, it's like, oh. And sometimes you actually kind of feel sad for them. You're like, you want to go, you know, make them feel better.
That's awesome. So you can see how it's already making a difference because they're able to just put into words what they're feeling.
That's right.
All right. So narrating how we feel is a huge part of emotional regulation. And sometimes people become adults and they never learn this skill. So being able to put your experience into words is such a learned skill. We are absolutely not born with it. So that's why identifying feelings is so key, right? So that's the first part of emotional regulation. And then the second part is teaching your child how to emotionally scale. So last week, I sent the parents off to go and emotionally scale themselves. And I said,
not the other spouse.
Exactly. I said, do not do this to anyone else because it's too easy to kind of point fingers and tell someone else how they act in certain situations. But it's really about increasing self-awareness. This week, I'm going to say it's okay to go ahead and narrate someone else's emotional scale. Okay. But not the spouse, not the other parent, but the child.
Okay.
So it doesn't matter how old your child is. Once you're doing more of the identifying feelings with them, you also can start talking to them about what they look like or act like when you can tell they're at a 5 or a 10. And so for an older child, this can be a collaborative process. You know, you might ask your 16, 17-year-old kid, okay, so if we were going to put like the emotion of anger on a scale where like 10 is infuriated and 5 is frustrated, what do you think happens when you're at a 10? And see what your child says, because they're old enough. They've kind of maybe develop some insight at this point in their life, and then go ahead and give them some observations of what you notice when they're also at a 10.
Okay.
And so you telling your child what you observe is so important in helping them increase their own self-awareness.
You know, it's funny you said that too, because we have a very close friend that told us a couple of weeks ago, this is actually, he brought this up about his child, talking about gaming addiction and whatnot. And he talked about, he took some things that we talked about and so he took the game away for whatever reason, and they were, you know, visiting somewhere, whatnot. But long story short, he took the game away. His 10-year-old freaked out. And so he actually took a video of his 10-year-old freaking out and showed him later on, said, hey, this is what you looked like when you couldn't play your game, you know. And his 10-year-old looked at it, realized it, and said, hey, man, I don't want to be like that, and hasn't played that game since.
Well, and so I know a lot of parents that do exactly what you just said, where they'll kind of record it and show it back to the child later. And that's okay to do if you're using it in a non-shaming, non-punitive way. Okay, so we're not trying to be critical when we're doing emotional scaling exercises with our kids and helping them learn how to identify feelings. We're trying to help them, you know, increase their emotional intelligence.
Yeah, we're trying to create awareness,
right,
of so what they're feeling.
Non-judgmental, like, hey, I just want to bring this to your attention. This is what's going on. What do you think about that?
Yeah, you so know? None of this, man, look at you, man. You look like an idiot.
Yeah, none of that. No right. Judgment, right? Or look at this, I'm so disappointed in you. You're not handling yourself well, right? Like, no, there's no commentary on it at all.
Yeah, and we can do that a lot. I mean, you know, especially if you have more than one kid in your household, too. You can, like, look at your brother, look at your sister, you know, see how they're acting and whatnot. Right. So we got to be very careful with that.
Exactly. And so the whole part of this that's different than when an adult is trying to self-regulate and increase self-awareness is that as the parent, it is part of your job to tell your child what you're observing. So another way to, so at 10, you help your child understand what their 10 is. They're going to tell you what they think it is. You're going to tell them what you see when they're at a 10. And then when it's happening, they're much more likely to recognize those things in themselves. You're going to do the same thing for at a 1, a 4, and a 5. So it's a joint collaborative conversation with each child. And then in the moment, you're giving like point of performance coaching, literally. So you're going to say to your child who's, you know, maybe rolling their eyes at you because they're just exasperated with like having to hear your rules again or your lecture again. You might say something like, hey, I think maybe you're like at a 5, because remember last time when we talked about being at a 5, you said rolling your eyes was part of that. I'm seeing that now. Let's go ahead and just agree to step away from this conversation. Let's come back to it later when we can be in a better mind space and talk about it clearly. And that's the agreement. So if you call a 5 on a family member, or if they call a 5 on you, everybody has to be willing to say, we prioritize emotional regulation in this house. We're going to take a break from the conversation and agree to have it later, when we're all calmer. Okay. Now that is a skill I work on with families over time. I mean, it takes weeks and weeks to get there where they're literally emotional scaling, not just themselves, but each other. And if they call it, it's like everything stops and it's a very safe place to just say, I'm not ready to have this conversation right now, or I don't think you are. But for children, okay, so that's the teenager example. For a toddler example, or a 7, 8, 9-year-old example, you might see like a tantrum, or you might see a raised voice or a lot of tears. And in those moments, you don't want to really engage. If you're trying to talk to someone when they're like in a very emotional space, they don't really hear what you're saying, okay? So what you want to be able to say is, I can see that you're at a 5. Because you're starting to cry and you're saying the same thing over again. I'm afraid you're about to run into your hiding spot and, you know, shut down, because that's what your 10 is. Let's go ahead and do something to help us calm down. So you drop whatever the issue is and you start using some coping skills. But the expectation for the child to go off and do those coping skills on their own is something that happens later. So every step of the way in this process, you are next to your child doing it with them.
And that's important to really understand and know, because there's a lot of times that we as parents want to try to talk away the emotion or the tantrum or the feeling, whatever's going on, try to explain away. And as you mentioned, it never does work. And we have to remember as parents, even with teenagers, but even more so with little kids being with them every step of the way, is that when that lid is flipped, their prefrontal cortex is not developed yet. So we have to be that for them, and we have to be there to help them close that lid. They can't do it on their own. So that's why we have to do it ourselves first and learn that skill, and then we can help teach and educate.
Right. And so literally, like, for example, with our 8-year-old, if she's at a 10, she will, she kind of like gets triggered by something that she's a worst case scenario thinker. Okay. So she will assume the worst because, you know, we may have said something, and without asking questions to clarify, she just automatically becomes really upset. And when she does, she'll like cry, you kind of see her become deflated.
Yeah, she'll disappear and hide underneath and the pillows or whatever.
Yeah, she shuts
else.
Down.
Yeah.
So we've talked to her. We've said, look, this is your 10. We want to keep you from getting to that point. So we can kind of see that flicker in her face, right? Of like, oh, she's at a 5. She's thinking the worst. Any moment now she's going to start crying. And I think all parents can like figure this out about their kids usually. And so we'll stop and we'll say, okay, you know, let's go into the other room, because doing this in front of the other kids also is not really recommended. So as much as you can, take your child into like a private conversation away from the other kids and talk it out and say, look, I think that we're on the verge of getting to a 10, or I can see that you're at a 10. Let's deal with the anxiety. Let's not even talk about what we're worried about. Let's just deal with those anxious feelings. And then we'll do 10 deep breaths. We will dry up the tears, we'll give each other a hug, and then she's ready to talk. And that's part of it.
Yeah, and it just makes me think also, even as adults, when we want to self-regulate, a lot of times that means us getting out of the situation, going for a walk, whatever that may look like. And so this is also helping teach kids, I would think, it's okay to get out of the situation, you know, go to a different room and regulate. And then one thing that's also really cool too that we do with our kids is that, you know, our kids love to do yoga. I do it for brownie points. My wife loves to do yoga. She gets the kids all involved in yoga. And so we can talk about belly breathing and some different things as well. So you can make it fun also, that kids will start remembering these things and just really knowing that it's okay to do this.
Right. And if you ever need help with like learning coping skills and practical tools, you can always call our offices. You can always consult with us, because that's what we do. I mean, that's what my office does every day. And that's what we learn, you know, what I walk parents through in therapy sessions, you know. So this episode's kind of like a free sample of a therapy session. Honestly, this is a lot of what we do when we're doing some parent training and education.
Yeah, and there's a lot more detail that we could, you know, get into, but we could be here for hours and whatnot. And, you know, just remember as parents, you know, our kids are seeing everything. They recognize different emotions and feelings. The more they can learn how to communicate those, obviously, is the key. And then the regulation part, obviously, is going to go hand in hand with the recognition of that emotion. You know, our 2-year-old, he comes up to us all the time. He can see our faces. Are you happy? Are you happy? So 15 times a day I get, Daddy, are you happy? And then I put a big old smile on my face. Yeah, I'm actually very happy, you know. So kids are seeing where we're at. Even if we are happy, if we don't have that big smile, kids are noticing. So we thank you for tuning in to the Parent Survival Podcast, where we talked about emotional regulations. And we just look forward to seeing you again. So thank you so much for joining us today.